Live from New York, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Damon Amendolara on CBS Sports Radio.
Good Monday to you, everybody. Thanks for being with us. We come to you live from the Quicken Loan Studios, national mortgage lender. Quicken Loans, apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. DA in for Jim today. You can usually catch me preceding Jim on many of the same CBS Sports Radio stations. And, of course, on Sirius XM 206 as well as the rest of CBS Sports Radio. We are simulcast here on the Jim Rome Show from our New York City studios on CBS Sports Network. So check us out there as well. Next hour, 1 hour from now, Eric Adelson's going to join us, NFL insider for Yahoo Sports. A lot of you guys have takes on Urban Meyer. What happens next? I have a hard time wondering how Ohio State doesn't let him go, because I kind of think that Urban Meyer's statement on Friday was a cannonball shot across the bow at administration. Hey, I did everything I was supposed to. Perhaps the smoking gun is still out there where Gene Smith is AD or somebody in the administration. There's evidence that they wanted to keep Zach Smith on staff and employed because he was the grandson of Earl Bruce, longtime coach at Ohio State. Perhaps that's what Urban Meyer is banking on. I just find it hard to believe that Urban Meyer is going to keep his job after basically saying, I did what I was supposed to do. Unless they get rid of the AD and keep Urban, which anything is possible in college football, let's face it. But as I've stated before, I did not think that Urban came off well on Friday. I mean, not only is Zach Smith completely tone deaf, saying it would be a quote-unquote crime if they fired Urban Meyer. You might want to walk that phrase back. Domestic violence is technically the crime here. If committed, firing a football coach is definitely not. But Urban also now admitting, I was just, you know, I was ill-prepared for that line of questioning. But you fired him the day before. You didn't think you were going to get a question? I mean, I know I bullied and lied and stuck it in your face and wagged my finger in your grill. But I wasn't ready for that. Wow, first thing ever you weren't ready for at a press conference. Got it. Okay, Urban. Yeah, you're totally believable and credible. Hey, man, if you're a Buckeyes fan and you want Urban Meyer to remain employed, you'll find any rationalization because you want to win football games. This happens everywhere. This is not just an Ohio State thing. This has happened at USC. This has happened at Penn State. This has happened at Florida. This has happened at a million different programs that have undergone scandals and wanted the coach to be retained because they like winning. And you know what? Bad things happen in this world. But do I think that Urban Meyer comes off as credible? Do I think Zach Smith comes off as credible? Absolutely not. Do I think that Courtney Smith has her own fair share of demons? Absolutely. Sounded like that was a relationship that had a lot of volatility, a lot of drama, a lot of stuff that went on between him and her that were problematic. But at the end of the day, Zach Smith to me comes off pretty much like a dirtbag. His explanations in the ESPN Sports Center interview, I thought, were pretty laughable at best about how she was bruised. And you're going to tell me, I mean, the way that he painted it was, I just had to move her out of the way to get through the door all of those times. I pressed her buttons, certainly. I pressed her buttons, but nothing physical. I just had to move her out of the way to get through the doorway. That's what he kept saying. Okay. At the end of the day, I think Zach Smith comes off pretty much as a lunkhead Neanderthal disaster. And whether he pressed her buttons, whether she was dramatic, whether whatever was provoked, at the end of the day, for Urban Meyer to keep that guy on his staff is problematic because he knew that there was a long list of incidents between them. And for him to keep that guy on his staff when he's just a wide receivers coach tells you all you need to know about knowing the right people in positions of power in college football. It's still a ton of politics. And Zach Smith had no business with that type of background being his own drama queen in that instance, holding on to a job as a wide receivers coach. I mean, he could easily be cut bait with. But why does Urban Meyer keep him? Because of politics. Because of loyalty. Because of who he knows. And that should come back to bite Urban and the administration. Terrell Owens did not go to Canton this weekend. Decided to have his quote-unquote acceptance speech for the Hall of Fame at his alma mater of UT Chattanooga.
Many of you may be wondering why we're here instead of Canton. It's not because how many times it took for me to be voted into the hall. It's about the mere fact that the sports writers are not in alignment with the mission and core values of the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, so he's calling hypocrisy from the writers. And this doesn't make any sense. Because is it a character concern that you're supposed to ignore when it comes to the NFL voting for the Hall of Fame? Well, you could say so in things like LT, instances like OJ, guys with major character concerns that off the field were not great people that got into legal drama, legal trouble, that they're still in the Hall of Fame or were inducted into the Hall of Fame. Sure, you can invoke that if they kept you out because of off-the-field drama. They kept you out for 2 years because of on-the-field drama. That's where T.O.'s rationale didn't hold any water. They didn't not allow him in because he was OJ or because he was LT. They didn't vote him in because he was destructive to his own team on the field. Was he great when he was in there? Absolutely. When he was focused and healthy, and even when he wasn't healthy, he was tremendous. And out of that Hall of Fame class, three guys were single-game defensive wreckers or offensive wreckers that could wreck a game plan. Ray Lewis, Randy Moss, T.O. Those three guys single-handedly could destroy the opponent. T.O. is a Hall of Famer. But you can't look at T.O.'s career and say that he himself didn't also undermine success on the field. This is not about morality here. I am not telling you that OJ's a good guy or LT's a great citizen. I'm telling you, those guys didn't hurt their teams on the field, and that's why the writers and the voters can overlook their off-the-field stuff. You're supposed to vote on the guy's football merits, not his personal stuff. And from football merits, T.O. was a great player. He is a Hall of Famer. He does have the numbers. But he also undermined coaches and quarterbacks and teams constantly. Constantly. And if T.O. didn't do that, he likely would have won championships. He was that great. But when you change zip codes every couple of years, and every coach you ever played for, save for Andy Reid, who recently said he was coachable, but let's face it, Andy Reid was not going to say that 15, 20 years ago, or 10 years ago, or 5 years ago. Every quarterback he's ever played with hates his guts. Most coaches can't stand him. Most teammates were like, yeah, I mean, he was kind of a disaster. T.O.'s rationale is not, it doesn't make any sense here. They kept you out for football reasons for 2 years. Now, look, you want to quibble with the year two? Fine. But not putting him in first ballot makes sense because he and his teams were not as great as they could have been because of his football problems of creating drama, friction, controversy, undermining the coaches and quarterbacks and teammates and everything else that goes into winning football games. And that's part of it. You can put up great numbers but also be a disaster. And that's why he was not in the first ballot. And oh, by the way, T.O. needs a history lesson because there is a lot of great players that did not get in first ballot. 855-212-4CBS. Twitter, DA on CBS. Mike is in Fort Worth listening to the CBS Sports Network on TV and watching it as well. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, how's it going, Damon?
Good. How you doing?
Pretty good. Hey, I think Urban Meyer keeps his job at Ohio State. it's like your last caller said, if they fire him now, they open themselves up to litigation. He did what he was supposed to do. He told somebody in 2015, if the administration wanted that assistant coach fired at that time, believe me, they would have did it. All he would have had to say is tell Urban Meyer it reflects bad on the university. We can't have him on the staff. They didn't do that. Once he told them that, that falls into their hands. So Urban Meyer is safe. Now, that press conference was terrible. It was a catastrophe. But lying to the press is not a crime, and I don't think it should be a fireable offense. You lie to the press, but that's not a crime. I don't believe it should be a fireable offense. So he did what he was supposed to do.
We need still to see evidence that he did what he was supposed to do. I mean, Urban Meyer can say that, but what happens if the administration says he did not do that? Right now, we could be in a he said, and they go, there's Urban Meyer never said anything to us. It could be, though, that both get fired, the AD Gene Smith and Urban Meyer. Let's not say that that's not a possibility. They could both get cleaned out here. And let's face it, Urban Meyer's statement on Friday was basically a Hail Mary to try to save his job because he knew he was going down. I don't know if that's necessarily, you can turn that ship around, that ocean liner around right now. Felix is next up. He's in North Carolina, watching the CBS Sports Network. What's up, Felix?
Hey, how you going?
Good, bud. How you doing?
I'm doing good, doing good.
What's up, my man?
I'm not doing good from last night watching the Yankees.
Oh, my gosh. Your Yankees got pummeled.
Yeah, what a debacle that was.
Three-run lead of the ninth inning with Aroldis Chapman, one of the best closers of the game.
Not supposed to happen. That's why you got Roseman Chapman there.
At this point
that,
in time?
That ball that was hit to third base. That should have been caught by Bird. Should have been caught, game over.
It should have never gotten to that level because Aroldis Chapman walked the bases loaded. And that's an enormous issue. It should have never gotten to that. The strength of the Yankees is supposed to be the bullpen, and last night it imploded. And I think when you watch what happened over the weekend, there's no way to believe that New York has any chance in this division. They needed to get a split at worst. They got swept. AL East, over. Done. Now they've got to worry about holding on a home field advantage in the wild card game. And then, oh, by the way, if they win that against Seattle or Oakland, they got to take on the Red Sox in the divisional round. Good luck with all that. Brian's next up, East Lansing, listening on 107.3 there. What's going on, Brian?
Hey, I have a question. Is Urban Meyer a state employee?
Yes.
Well, if Urban Meyer works for the state of Ohio, Urban Meyer came on television and lied to the state of Ohio. So he lied to his employer. That is a fireable offense. But that's not all I wanted to get at. As much as I think Urban needs to lose his job for what he knew, for what happened, I have a feeling he's not going to. I have a feeling it's the same reason he doesn't lose his job. It's the same reason that Michigan State still has Izzo and D'Antonio, because he puts wins on the board and not losses. And that's all these big colleges seem to care about, is if these guys win or lose.
This will be the ultimate test here, Bri, of how much winning does matter. Because let's be perfectly clear here. If Urban Meyer was a 5-7 coach, there's no way he would have been fired last Thursday. There's no way. There is, forget court of law, forget the Title IX violation. This is obviously embarrassing enough to a program at a school to where most athletic directors, if they were looking for a reason to fire a coach, would have done so immediately. This is the truest test of how much winning can trump everything, because this is easily a fireable offense for a guy that missed the postseason. If he loses to Michigan and Wisconsin and Penn State and Iowa last year, let's be real. There's a lot less of a leash for Urban Meyer to potentially save himself with. We'll continue with your phone calls, the Urban Meyer situation, also the T.O. situation, and let's tackle Mike Socia. Is he lying? Oh, poppycock. Damon Amendolara, DA in for Jim today here on CBS Sports Radio and the CBS Sports Network. Now, there's something to be said for being the best. You know you've outrun, outpaced, and outsmarted the competition. Elite athletes know that you can't be the best until you've beaten the best. If you want to compete at the highest level, you need to be strong and stay strong, like Castrol Edge. The strongest full synthetic motor oil, engineered with fluid titanium technology to reduce power-robbing friction and to maximize engine performance. Did you know that friction can rob 10% of performance from your engine? Imagine being lined up across the ball from someone who's at 100% when you're at 90. Advantage, other guy. Castrol Edge is strong under pressure, reducing friction so that your engine can perform at its highest level. It's not only strong, it's 3 times stronger than the leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown. As tested in the Kurt Orban test, that's the strength your engine needs to perform at its highest level and keep you living on the edge. Castrol Edge, stronger under pressure.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
If you want to compete at the highest level, you need to be strong and stay strong like Castrol Edge. It's the strongest full synthetic motor oil, 3 times stronger than the leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown, as tested in the Kurt Orban test. Castrol Edge, stronger under pressure. Thanks for being with us this Monday. Damon Amendolara, DA, in for Jim today. Always a total rush to be able to do this on this show, on this platform. You could usually catch me before Jim on many of the same CBS Sports Radio stations here on the CBS Sports Network. We are simulcast today, so check us out there in sparkling HD. Jake in Buffalo tweets, why does anyone care if some dude shows up to a boring-ass induction ceremony or not? Who really wants to attend this kind of BS in the first place? Well, let's take this piece by piece here, Jake. Number one, I think that there's a lot of players that want to attend because all of the other players do. This is their greatest celebration of their individual greatness, their individual legacy. This is the ultimate validation on all of the work that you put in. Whatever it is that you do in your career, imagine being inducted into the Hall of Fame of your industry, not regionally, not by state, not by town, but nationally, and really in this case, globally. I think you'd show up. Now, if you're talking about the fans can show up whether they want to or not. But let's not act like this is not a big deal for players. It's a huge deal for players. That's why everyone ever has showed up outside of T.O. Reports over the weekend from a guy that knows his baseball, Ken Rosenthal from The Athletic, saying that Mike Scioscia is prepared to step down after the season. 19 years for Mike Scioscia. 19 years managing the Angels of Anaheim, Los Angeles. Here's Mike Scioscia responding.
Nothing has changed since we talked in October. That's the best way I can put it. You were there.
I was.
Nothing has changed. And sometimes there's always chatter out there, and the only word I have for it is poppycock.
I was on the side of Mike Scioscia needing to retire. This is a guy that is wasting away the prime years of Mike Trout, not even getting to the postseason. They haven't won a playoff game in like a decade. It's gone stale. It's gone soft. And Mike Trout can't afford to miss all of the prime of his career missing the playoffs altogether. So you know what? I was on the side of Mike Scioscia needing to step down. Gosh darn it, then he used the word poppycock in 2018. And I was all about needing to keep him. Poppycock! Definition, nonsense, rubbish, claptrap, balderdash, blather, moonshine, garbage. Had he used the word balderdash, that's the only way I could have more respect for him. Hogwash, baloney, drivel, bunk, eyewash, piffle, phooey, jive, malarkey, gobbledygook, mumbo jumbo. Those are the only words I would accept that are better than poppycock.
Poppycock.
Gobbledygook. Malarkey. Not Mike. And so now I'm starting to have a different vibe on it. I mean, The guy did use a pretty awesome word to describe why that was an erroneous report. Let's face it, Mike Socia is gone. And he should step down because that thing has flatlined. And when you have a guy like Mike Trout, you need a fresh jolt of energy there to take advantage of arguably the greatest player of his generation and one of the greatest players ever while you have him under contract. I would imagine while Angels ownership is very loyal to Mike Socia, they probably know it's time to get a little jolt in there and might have leaned on Mike Socia. Maybe Socia was kind of ready to pack it in as well and decided to come to an agreement after the season. Socia could announce his retirement or stepping down or what have you. And he didn't want it out, and the Angels didn't want it out, and yet it got out because Rosenthal's a great reporter, and now Socia is forced to say poppycock. But do I think he's going to be done after the season? Hell yeah. Professor Wilson is in Boise, Idaho, listening on 93.1 The Ticket there. What's up, Professor Wilson?
What's up, DA? How you doing, brother?
I feel great. How you doing?
Oh, I feel great. Doing well. You know, after life takes its turns and things happen. So after leaving Radiation, right, I noticed your take on T.O., and I wanted to address this. And I think that countless great athletes undermine their overseers, and we even see this in hockey. You know, we see this in horse racing. As my man Jim loves to make comparisons. But I think undermining coaches as an argument to exclude T.O. from the Hall of Fame is essentially empty. And the
well, not completely. Not completely. I didn't say keep him out of the Hall of Fame. I said I thought it was valid for them not to vote him in first ballot because of it.
You know, but overall, I think your general perspective on the interactions with T.O. and the institutional oppression that he so...
Institutional oppression? I'm just talking about getting along with your quarterback.
You know, I hear it's similar to your take on, you know, while I'm battling, you know, cancer over these few months, I've been battling trying to get into your show to let you know that your take on Kaepernick is quite similar to your take on T.O. And if you want to make the Hall of Fame, you should embrace the black perspective. That's my take.
Man, I don't know how you could possibly connect my T.O. take to my Kaepernick take, but look, here's the deal. Systemic oppression when it comes to T.O., the guy couldn't get along with his quarterbacks. The guy couldn't get along with his coaches. The guy had to be shipped here and there and everywhere in the prime of his career because he was a great wide receiver, but simply undermined consistently what was happening within his locker room. And that's a football thing. And if that's a football piece of the puzzle, taking it into account for the voters of the Hall of Fame is totally valid. He is a Hall of Famer. But you know what? This is also a problem of modern society. He deserves everything right now or else it's unfair. So what happens in 1974 if a guy like Gale Sayers doesn't get in year one, has to wait until year two? Does everybody scream, he deserved right away to get in? No, we do this now because this is what we believe, that people deserve everything and I deserve everything all the time immediately. There are better players in the Hall of Fame that had to wait after year one of being on the ballot. But people want to create drama where there is none. T.O. actually creates drama. Literally. And that was it. And that is a valid reason to keep him out of a football Hall of Fame for a year. A year. A year. And I challenge anybody to study up on the greats of all time in the Hall of Fame. Do a little research and see how many great players didn't get into the Hall of Fame year one, and then tell me if this was some type of unbelievable disservice done to T.O. Give me a break, please. The only reason this is a big deal is because he made it a big deal. And if he didn't take his ball and go home to UT Chattanooga, you wouldn't care. He made it a big deal, and thus it got people that want to make things a big deal a big deal. Had he said, you know what, during my playing days, I was immature. I was narcissistic. I made it about me. I wish I could have fit in better. I had some great coaches and great quarterbacks and great teammates that gave me a chance to succeed. I made the most of my ability, but I really do wish I was part of building bridges instead of tearing them down or firebombing them. You know what? I am so proud to be in the Hall of Fame because I'm with Jerry Rice and Randy Moss and Chris Carter and Lance Allworth, Don Hutson and Steve Largent and Lynn Swan and John Stallworth. I'm part of those guys. Man, I am proud to be there. And I could have been better, and I am so proud to go there. None of you would be saying, I can't believe they kept him out. It was systemic oppression. Give me a break. You want a reason to gripe, and he gave you a reason to gripe. And had he been a bigger man, you would have been a bigger man. Except he wasn't, because he's T.O. and he can't. He actually, mentally, does not have the ability to be the bigger man. And that will forever be his vicious cycle. 855-212-4227, the phone number. On Twitter, DA on CBS. We'll come back with your thoughts on T.O., on Urban Meyer, and the most amazing Brown stat ever. And that's saying something.
Live from New York, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Damon Amendolara on CBS Sports Radio.
And a happy Wednesday, Monday. Boy, ahead of me, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So glad you're with us here on the show. Always a fun time to be in for the Jim Rome Show here on CBS Sports Radio. And, of course, the CBS Sports Network live in simulcast Technicolor every single day here on TV. Coming up next hour here on the show, we will have Eric Adelson, NFL insider for Yahoo Sports, join us here on the program to talk about the weekend that was in Canton for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, as well as some of the interesting NFL storylines starting to bubble to the surface as we get ready for the first full weekend of NFL preseason action. You want an amazing Brown stat? Peter King tweeted this out. After Corey Coleman has been traded to the Buffalo Bills, wide receiver of the Cleveland Browns, a former first-round pick, number 15 overall, the Browns had 11 first-round picks in eight drafts between 09 and 16, okay? Eight drafts, 09, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. Eight drafts, 11 first-rounders in those eight drafts. None of them are still with the Browns. Now, I don't do this to rub salt in the wounds. Browns fans are, by and large, a lovable bunch. They've been through a lot. In fact, I just met an old curmudgeon Browns fan that became a Browns fan back in the 50s. The guy is 78 years old right now. He's busting my chops the other day. I walk into his store. What are you going to buy? Going to buy something? Going to buy? I said, boy, what burr's been under your saddle? We start talking about sports, what I do. He admits, yeah, I'm a Browns fan. I go, oh, well, that makes sense. I'm sorry. I just give you money at a charity at this point. These people have been beaten down. This is a group, a fan base that has been stomped on for generations. This guy's 78 years old. He can't even remember who the starting quarterback is going to be this year. What does it matter anyway? I get it. I bring this up because could you imagine having 11 first-round draft picks over 8 years and a season and a half later, none of them are on the team? Since 2009, here are your first-round draft picks. 09, center Alex Mack. 2010, corner Joe Hayden. 2011, defensive tackle Phil Taylor. 2012, a real doozy, running back Trent Richardson, quarterback Brandon Whedon. 2013, Barkevious Mingo. 2014, another doozy, Justin Gilbert, Johnny Manziel. 2015, Danny Shelton, defensive tackle, Cameron Irving, center. 2016, Corey Coleman. None of those guys are still on the Browns roster. And it's not like the Browns aren't looking for talent. It's not like this is a Super Bowl team and nobody can get on the field here. This is an 0-16 team that went that badly, bust for 8 years in a row to where none of them are still on the team. You're talking about the 2016 draft. There's only been two drafts since then, and one of them hasn't gotten on the field yet. First-round draft picks are the lifeblood of NFL football teams. That's your one chance of the first 32 picks to really grab a future all-pro, pro bowler, at least a starter for 5 to 7 years. Not only did the Browns go belly up on all of those picks, all 11 of them through 8 years, but some of them were such amazing flameouts, and they were top 10 selections, that it's hard to fathom how a franchise, a front office, could be that bad for that long, that dramatically. It'd be one thing if these guys were just role players, if these guys were good, not great, but that these guys were at least on the roster. It'd be one thing if one of these guys was a Pro Bowler still on the team. One of these guys was a starter on the team. Two of the guys out of the 11 happened to still be on the roster. They went 0 for 11. Joe Hayden had a good career. Obviously, now he's gone. But look at that list. Trent Richardson, Phil Taylor, Brandon Whedon, Barkevious Mingo, Justin Gilbert, Johnny Manziel, Corey Coleman, Cameron Irving. The list goes on and on and on. That is just disaster after disaster. Which is what makes me horrified that they went with Baker Mayfield and Denzel Ward, because both of those guys felt like a reach. Both of those guys at 1 and at 4 felt like a reach. Now, this happens when you turn over your front office, coaching staff, general manager, basically every other year, because then your mistakes that you made 2 years ago, you don't have a chance to learn from. So then the new front office has to come in and perhaps make the same exact mistakes. But Corey Coleman just got traded, and it wasn't like he was great. I mean, he was a 30-catch, 400-yard-per-year guy, and they drafted him number 15 overall. You just can't strike out that badly at the top, but you know how you become 0-16? When you strike out on every pick at the top for 8 years. That is actually the only way you can do it unless you're an expansion team. You know, the 76 Bucks went 0-14 and then lost their first 12 the next year. They began their careers as a franchise at 0-26. But they didn't have any draft picks. I mean, they had them, but they were an expansion team and had to take guys off of the street. The only way to go 0-16 is, like Matt Millen can teach you, if you go 0-for for 5 or 6 years of the draft. In this case, basically 0-for for 8 years leads you to last season, which in some ways is almost more impressive than going 16-0, because it's that hard to go 0-16. You've got to draft at the top of the draft every year and miss on every pick. There's a lot of amazing Brown stats out there. That's one of the most amazing. They went 0-for-11 on the last 8 drafts before 2017 in terms of guys still on the roster. What? Go look at the Eagles drafts. Go look at the Packers drafts, the Patriots drafts, the Steelers drafts. My guess is that out of those guys, out of those teams, first-round draft picks between 08 and 16, if that's 8 drafts, they each average minimum 4 or 5 of those first rounders still on the roster. And those teams are drafting near the bottom of the first, not at the top of the first. John's next up. He's in Myrtle Beach, listening to 100.3 to CBS Sports Radio. What's up, John?
Hey, I got a question about P.O.
Yes, sir.
Okay, when we talk about P.O. and then you bring up O.J. and LT's moral deficiencies, can't we include Ray Lewis in that group, or is he off limits because he's a sports talking head?
No, sure. Put him into the group. I mean, it was not murder. It was obstruction of justice. But sure, you can put him in there. My point is, The NFL wants to separate itself from the moral conundrum. There are some bad guys that are really good at football, and do we want to keep them out of the Hall of Fame because they were bad guys off the field? Do we want to take O.J. Simpson out of the Hall of Fame and go down a very tricky road of deciding morality of players' behaviors off the field? Look, there are plenty of football players, by and large, who play a very violent game, who have violent tendencies that maybe because they had their brain knocked around enough times over the course of time, end up doing really bad things in their post-career, what have you. During their career, the NFL, pro football writers, and the Hall of Fame knew, let's not muddy the waters here. But for T.O., they're not keeping him out based on a moral conundrum. They're keeping him out for 2 years. I would advise 1 year. I was okay with them saying no on the first ballot. I thought he should have been in the second ballot. And he's obviously a Hall of Famer based on his production, his stats, and his greatness. But he also undermined success on the football field by being a chemistry cancer. LT, O.J. Simpson, you can never say that what they did off the football field affected their football. In this case, T.O.'s distractions, narcissism, chemistry concerns, whatever it is, obliviousness, that affected the football. That affected how good his teams were, and you can't separate the two. Here's another problem at the T.O. argument. If you are making the pro-T.O. argument that he deserved into the first ballot, you live in a fantasy world. And I mean fantasy, not in la-la. You live in fantasy football world. You just look at stats. You look at most catches, most yards, most touchdowns, most fantasy points. And guess what? T.O. put up fantasy points everywhere he went. But if you get the guys that he played with in a room alone and say, hey, man, how was it really like playing with T.O.? You think that there's a reason that every one of his quarterbacks ever don't go to bat from him publicly? Have to hem and haw Jeff Garcia, Tony Romo, Donovan McNabb, go down the list. You think there's a reason that it constantly is quarterbacks and coaches kind of having to talk around the fact that T.O. is great, but you live in a fantasy football land where he's putting up those points, and so that's all that matters. No, that's not all that matters in football. Were the Philadelphia Eagles the most talented team in the NFL last year? No, certainly not when Carson Wentz went down. But boy, do they play great together. The New England Patriots aren't usually the most talented team. But boy, they're pretty damn good together. There's a football element of that, unless you live in fantasy football land. Here's your phone number. Our New York City studios, 855-212-4CBS. Tony's next up in Arkansas, listening to 92.1. What's up, Tone?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. What's up?
Hey, give me another angle on the Urban Meyer situation. Can't we all know that how smart a man that guy is and how prepared he is. Can it be the reason nothing makes sense about him firing Zach and doing all this because he was told to right before media days? It's his coach, grandson of Urban Meyer. Nothing makes sense because it can't make sense. The reason he was not prepared because he couldn't be prepared. You know, the brass knew about it. The ex-wife was bringing this public. There's a lot of issues going on. The brass says, hey, you need to get rid of this guy. You need to be the one to do it. He wasn't prepared. You know he's always prepared. He's a smart guy. The reason it doesn't make sense, because it can't make sense. The reason he's in a bad situation, because he's out of his comfort zone. He's not prepared.
Yeah, but here's the problem with that. He fires Zach Smith the day before media days. Does he not think he's going to get a question about that? He fires him because either he felt like there was too much smoke around Zach Smith, or his administration did. Either one, who knows? You're telling me that the most prepared coach outside of Nick Saban ever of this generation and one of the greats of all time fires a guy because of smoke around domestic violence and then doesn't think he's going to get a question about why he was fired? And then proceeds to stonewall and embarrass and demean the line of questioning. I don't know how that gets started. I don't know who says that. And then comes back 2 weeks later and says, yeah, you got me. I was lying. Well, who do you believe? Sorry, but the guy that just admitted to lying, I don't believe. Therein lies the conundrum here for Urban Meyer. It's when the liar admits I was lying that time, but never else. You can trust me now, I'm telling the truth now, but then I was lying. Hard for me to stomach that. Let's talk NFL. Next, Eric Adelson, NFL Insider, Yahoo Sports. On Hall of Fame weekend, T.O. and the upcoming week, full one of the preseason. D.A. in for Jim today.